Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
At the two-day summit, the two men had a visibly warm encounter that went for more than 2 hours, far longer than expected, to the point where Mr. Trump had to push a scheduled meeting with British Prime Minister Theresa May to Saturday. Trump's America First policy and Brexit presented a challenge for supporters of globalization at the summit. With so much discord on matters of trade and climate, host Angela Merkel said talks were difficult. A final statement was expected to include rejection of protectionism. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Hamburg.
U.S. bombers, jointly with the South Korean forces, conducted rare live fire drills near the border with North Korea. The South Korean military said in a statement that the drill was designed to sternly respond to the series of North Korea's ballistic missile launches. The military said two U.S. B-1B Lancers deployed from Anderson Air Base in Guam, joined by U.S. and South Korean jet fighters in the eastern province, dropped weapons in a simulated destruction of an enemy ballistic missile launcher and underground facilities. North Korea carried out a test launch earlier in the week of an intercontinental ballistic missile, complete with a re-entry vehicle that could allow it to be equipped with a nuclear warhead. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has named former U.S. Ambassador to NATO Kurt Volker to serve as special representative for Ukraine negotiations. The announcement comes ahead of Tillerson's first official visit to Kiev Sunday.
After sitting in on the much-anticipated meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to Kiev to demonstrate U.S. support for Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko. Ukraine was among the issues discussed by Trump and Putin, but Tillerson did not disclose any details. Joining Tillerson on the trip, Kurt Volker, the new point person in negotiations to end the Ukraine conflict under the Minsk Agreement. In a statement naming Volker as the new Ukraine envoy, Tillerson said the U.S. remains fully committed to the objectives of the Minsk Agreements, a 13-point plan that starts with the ceasefire and withdrawal of heavy weapons from the front lines in eastern Ukraine and includes constitutional reforms by the Ukrainian government. I'm Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
Thousands of troops patrolled Indian Kashmir on Saturday as authorities imposed widespread restrictions to stop protests planned for the anniversary of a local militant leader, Rehan Wani, whose killing in 2016 by armed forces pulled the Himalayan region into a fresh spiral of violence after several years of relative peace. Internet services were shut down and police raised barricades between neighborhoods. Shops and businesses remained closed in the Kashmiri capital. Police fired tear gas in at least four places where protesters attempted to march in the streets. The United States is arranging for an American doctor to visit China to examine ailing Chinese dissident Liu Xiaobo, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2010 when he was in prison for his long and nonviolent struggle for fundamental human rights in China. The 61-year-old was sentenced to 11 years in prison in 2009 for what is said to incite subversion of state power after he helped write a petition known as Charter 8. He was granted medical parole in late June to a hospital in China's northeastern city to be treated for late-stage liver cancer. In the past 5 years, terrorist attacks have killed nearly 20,000 people across Africa. Two groups, Boko Haram and al-Shabaab, accounted for most of them. But while these and other militant groups remain active, fatal terrorist attacks across the continent are on pace to fall for a second straight year. Total number of attacks currently running far below 2012 highs. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions Friday visited Guantanamo Bay Prison, where the United States has been holding terrorism suspects. The Justice Department official said that he traveled there to understand the current operations at the facility. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
The Commission will sit down and find a solution and a way forward. But I think we have pronounced ourselves that we're going to appeal the decision and hope that we will get a favorable ruling on the same.
A Kenyan High Court strikes down the Electoral Commission's contract awarded to a Dubai-based company to print ballot papers for the upcoming elections.
So we had received the 6 aspirants and we went through their files, we consulted the law, and finally we came out with a list of 3 that qualified to campaign as presidential candidates.
The Rwandan Electoral Commission disqualifies candidates ahead of next month's poll, including the only lady presidential candidate. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, says it would appeal against a high court decision which struck down the award of contract to a Dubai-based company to print ballot papers to be used for the August 8 polls. In its ruling Friday, the court said the Electoral Commission failed to conduct adequate public participation, a move that goes against constitutional requirements. The main opposition group, the National Super Alliance, or NASA, challenged the contract awarded to the Dubai-based company. For reaction, I reached Andrew Limo, spokesman for the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
I think this is very regrettable, considering the time left to the election. But just like most of the challenges we have faced before, the Commission will sit down and find a solution and a way forward. But I think we have pronounced ourselves that we're going to appeal the decision and hope that we will get a favorable ruling on the same.
But I also understand that the company that was giving the contract has begun the printing already. How does this complicate your efforts to organize credible elections this year?
We had earlier said the presidential ballot papers, the printing for that will start on 18th of July. So we had not printed. And you see, the court has made the ruling in regard to the presidential ballot papers only.
What is next for the IEBC now? Looking at these challenges, will some of these concerns expressed by people that took you to court be considered because they seem to have concerns about this particular company that they said appear to have links with President Uhuru Kenyatta, which would undermine the credibility of the election?
I think that's a matter we will leave to the courts, because in their ruling, we've been only faulted for not having public participation on the same. So that's the interpretation. The issue of whether it is associated with any of our clients, the political parties or candidates, wasn't the issue.
Apart from this court ruling, what are some of the efforts the IEBC is putting in place to meet its calendar based on the activities that you outlined recently?
It's very apparent, and anyone can see that despite the hurdles we've had, we are not the ones asking for extensions on the timelines, because we had set timelines that were very clear. We shared with our stakeholders. And if you look at them, this is the most challenging that we have had. All the others, we have been able to find solutions, fast-track processes, and somehow we were excited that we were making very good progress. But definitely this has been a major setback. But let's cross that river when we get there, because from the appeal, we should be optimistic that we'll get the favorable ruling.
Would the IEBC, the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, have the time needed to finish the timetable that you put out to all your stakeholders, including the political parties?
Well, whatever the outcome, then definitely that would be a very rushed process. And, you know, elections and election materials need diligence, meticulous, and very, very laborious logistical arrangements. So it's going to be quite a challenge. We're having a management meeting, and these are some of the things we're going to discuss and see what ways within the law and consider options available for us, even as we anticipate the favorable outcome from the impending appeal.
What message is the IEBC giving to Kenyans following this ruling?
Well, it's unfortunate that it has come to this, but all intentions and all our efforts are well-meaning. We mean well for this country, and it's just unfortunate that it's been characterized by such challenges. But I think we should be judged by how resilient we have been, that in every other situation we have been able to pull through effectively. Technology is in place, and the training is going on, the recruitment of 364 clerks is going on, and the training. So we've made great progress in various areas, and this is just one area that is so critical that there has been a setback. But we believe, I think, we will come out of this. At the end of the day, the polling date does not change, and our focus is on the polling day. We will do everything within the law.
Andrew Limo is the spokesman for the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. He spoke with me from Nairobi. The Rwandan National Electoral Commission on Friday disqualified three candidates for the upcoming August 4 presidential poll. The electoral body says the candidates failed to meet requirements such as collecting enough supporting signatures. Rwandans go to the polls on August 4 and will choose among long-term President Paul Kagame, Frank Habineza of the opposition Democratic Green Party, and independent candidate Philippe Mpayimana. For more on the electoral process, I read Charles Munyaneza, the executive secretary of the Rwanda National Electoral Commission in the capital, Kigali.
We announced the finalists of the candidates that are going to be campaigning for the office of the president. And normally when we are doing that, we adhere to the law and the institution. That's what we have been doing since we announced the provisional list on 27th of last month. So we had received the six aspirants, and we went through their files, we consulted the law, and finally we came out with a list of three that qualified to campaign as presidential candidates.
If I may ask you, who were the three who qualified, and who were those who did not meet the criteria?
The three that qualified are His Excellency President Paul Kagame, who is the incumbent, and there is Mr. Habineza Frank, who is the flag bearer for the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda, and Mr. Mpayimana Philip, who is an independent candidate. And those that were disqualified, or those that did not meet the requirements of the law, are Mr. Mwenedata Gilbert, then Mr. Barafinda Sekikubo Fred, and Ms. Rwigara Nshimiyimana. Yeah, those are the three that qualified and the three that did not meet all the requirements as set by the Constitution and the electoral law.
After coming up with the list of those who qualified, what's next for the Electoral Commission? What's the next step?
Yeah, the next step is that we are going forward with the electoral calendar. The next item that is going to be following is the re-election campaign that starts on 14th of July, which is a week from now, almost a week from now. So we are preparing for that, and we hope also the candidates that also qualified are also preparing for that. And, of course, we have already started putting in place mechanisms to start printing of ballot paper, which, in fact, starts tomorrow. To be precise, it starts Sunday because today is Saturday. And we are going to print until the 30th of July. That's according to our program.
Amnesty International came up with a statement criticizing the political climate in the country, saying that the Electoral Commission would organize elections under a climate of fear and repression. What's your reaction to that?
First of all, I've not read that report. Secondly, those people did not consult me or any other person in the Electoral Commission. So I think their report may not be balanced in the first place. So I don't know where they got the story, but what we see on the ground is totally different from what that group of people are saying.
One of the candidates who was disqualified said that his supporters were harassed, intimidated, and all that. What do you say to that? Because he was saying that he was prevented, literally, from going through the process laid down by the Electoral Commission to get about 600 signatures or more from the 30 districts to meet that requirement.
No, you know, these people have had almost 45 days of soliciting those signatures, which is a very, very long period of time. So we have been meeting them regularly. We've been meeting these people who have been collecting signatures. They are incidences where they have been airing out for some problems here and there, but we have been talking with them. But there was no formal complaint. We did not hear anybody taking a claim to police to investigate or to local government. There was nothing like that was made. So to us, we think it's not true, and we did not see anything that could stop them from getting the signatures that they were supposed to get. By the way, these are only 600 signatures out of over 7 million, close to 7 million voters. So we are failing to raise 600 signatures out of 7 million registered voters. We think that wouldn't be a very big cause for somebody to say that he or she has been disqualified because of that.
Charles Munyaneza is the executive secretary of the Rwanda National Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from Kigali. The Zimbabwean ruling party, the ZANU-PF, main opposition movement for democratic change led by Morgan Tsvangirai, and other opposition groups have launched their campaigns ahead of next year's elections. Incumbent and long-time President Robert Mugabe will lead his party, the ZANU-PF, in an election expected to be his last time for the 93-year-old leader. He is expected to face competition from main opposition leader and former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai. For analysis on the latest development in the campaigns, I reach Joy Mabenge of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, an umbrella group for civil society organizations.
It seems to me everything about Zimbabweans revolves around elections. In fact, since the year about 2000, we have been in a perpetual electoral cycle. Immediately after every election, I believe the campaigning continues. Clearly, political players are now in search of the heart and soul of Zimbabweans. We've seen ZANU-PF through the president of that party and the president of the country, President Mugabe, launching the interface meetings with the young people, which has largely turned out to be meetings with ZANU-PF supporters and many other people that seemingly forced marched to those meetings. And we have also begun to see the main opposition led by Morgan Tsvangirai doing the same part. More worryingly is that opposition political parties keep on sprouting even at the 11th hour, and we begin to see how Zimbabweans are certainly going to be confused in terms of the search for the most appropriate presidential candidate as well as the lieutenants that this person will work with.
For years, Zimbabwean opposition groups have attempted to come up with a united front like a coalition. Why are they not coming together? Because not coming together, some analysts are saying, gives Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party an easy path to victory.
The continued splitting of the MDC has also led to the formation of other political parties, because then Zimbabweans keep on believing that because the MDCT has contested in elections for quite a number of times, and because of reasons, some of which are beyond their control, Zimbabweans are beginning to believe that it might be better to have other players come into the fore. But I believe, as a political analyst, that Zimbabweans' best foot forward might be a political party that has been tried and tested, that has almost on several occasions dislodge ZANU-PF. And what might be needed at this point in time is for the political parties to realize that the Zimbabwean dream that is shared by the generality of Zimbabweans can only be realized if they come together, but not only come together through a coalition. The coalition must define a political party that says that there cannot be an election in Zimbabwe unless there are serious political reforms that include but are not limited to serious electoral reforms.
There have been issues about vote rigging, vote tampering, pre, during and post-election violence and all that. Should those be included in those demands for electoral reforms? Because so far, the ZANU-PF and other political parties have resisted those calls for reforms.
You see, the resistance by ZANU-PF on those calls for reforms is affected because, as ZANU-PF says through their various mouthpieces, they have said, and I quote, "We cannot reform ourselves out of power." That's what ZANU-PF says. But we've seen throughout history that circumstances will force them to at least yield to some degree of reforms, which is exactly what happened in 2007 into 2008 throughout the formation of the inclusive government.
ZANU-PF supporters are saying that the call or the demand by opposition groups for electoral reforms is what the government has listened to and has come up with the use of biometric system of registration and being deployed during the elections. Do you think that at all could have any impact on the credibility of the upcoming elections next year?
I wouldn't say it's not going to have any impact on the credibility. But as I said, biometric voter registration is just but one component of the electoral process itself. In fact, biometric voter registration, the way we have understood it from what the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has said, is that it is just that, biometric voter registration. It cannot be and will not be extended to a biometric voting system. Those that are interested in free, fair and credible elections must look out for other things beyond just this technical process itself. In fact, if anything, people are beginning to worry around when people have registered. Who is going to be manning the server? Where is the server going to be sitting? Who will have access to that data? What else will be used by the ruling party in terms of the data that people provide when they do this biometric voter registration process?
Joy Mabenge is a leading member of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, an umbrella group for civil society organizations. He spoke with me from Midrand, South Africa. The G20 summit has ended in Hamburg. The meeting included talks on issues of interest to Africa, including global warming, migration and trade and investment. It also highlighted the G20's new compact with Africa, which aims to boost investment on the continent, and the so-called Mekelle plan to improve transparency and good governance for the continent. John Strumlaw is a professor of international relations at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. He told viewers William Eagle that the summit will be successful if the G20 succeeds in launching the African Compact and other initiatives that include carefully negotiated benchmarks for success for the continent.
It's a complicated picture, rendered more so because of Trump's lack of regard for multilateral processes and the like. But you start taking apart what would the agenda look like for the compact with Africa. On the humanitarian front, Trump has been talking more about the need to address humanitarian crises in recent days, even though his budget recommendations, and this is the alarm bell for all of these other G19 members, at least those who want to take this exercise seriously. And the G20, G19 is a mixed bag of countries, as we know, but they are responsible for 85% of the world economy and two-thirds of their people. So it's a good group to have these conversations with. And with America, you've got to figure out, well, if he's going to aid on humanitarian, fine, but he's probably not going to aid on climate change and the global the Green Climate Fund, which is essential for Africa to deal with the problems that are afflicting them from the more rapid global warming. That has to be funded absent the U.S. contribution, which was huge. I mean, it was $3 billion that Obama pledged for the first $10 billion. Trump has said no more. That means that the $1 billion stands and no more. How do you make up that deficit of the $2 billion? Is there enough resources around? Sure there is. But you have to get those countries who are and probably European, who are concerned about that. With regard to migration and immigration, the Europeans are going to step up. With regard to infrastructure, the Chinese may step up. The U.S. just can no longer be considered to be the default to-go-to person to take the lead in providing lots of resources. And then you have to ask the question you're asking, Bill, about whether civil society or the private sector can step in. I mean, the compact with Africa is supposed to create an environment conducive to more private foreign investment. That's going to happen irregardless of whether Trump is there or not. But the climate is important, and the climate should have the U.S. at the table. But if the U.S. is not going to be at the table or going to be a minor player, then the others have to step up and fill that gap. And Africans are realizing more and more that they cannot no longer turn just to the the default of Uncle Sam, they're going to have to figure out a way to do it themselves and work around this.
For you, what would it take for this G20 summit to be successful?
Well, you know, obviously I'd like to see the compact with Africa given appropriate prominence. I'd like to see that less attention paid to the Putin-Trump meeting, because that captivates the media attention. Where you can have a successful summit of this kind is to have these countries come together and say, look, we don't have a ready solution for Africa, but we want to launch a process, a serious process with benchmarks. And we sort of, like the climate change agreement, want to have these benchmarks negotiated carefully, and then we're going to be held to them. Let's get that process going. If this summit launched that process, Bill, then I think it was a good start.
John Stramlaw is a professor of international relations at the University of Witwatersrand. He spoke with viewers. William Eagle from Johannesburg.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two Face. NATO C. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1500 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music.
Wake up, dance this music.
Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Mugamba mukondera Ngaya mugamba anti yetakola byachikwangala Ngaya mugana ebyokurana Ngabo mukubetama akuchusiza dala Ngaya ukana nyo kubabubuka balala Ngaya mugana bawali nguli ne Sange kanisa ngayone mekaneka Mambite ya chimanyanti yali ya chikwangala Pasta yali muyaye nganonya za mata Namu ikirizo kusika no kugaba Ntiamu wese ntagenda yamba wajagana Mboya kuna Pasta kwa samu chitibwa Yafuka muya iye Nenja yukati ajinywa Ayokeranu ya iye Nemuchi ya ye jasula Hala muito muya iye Tebyechi ya ye vyakola Na yaba itaba ya iye Kubate wakola vyebabu Sanga yali kami uche ya baku siwa siwa wafuka muya iye nenja ikati ojinywa kukeranu ya iye nemuche ya ye josura ama kuito muya iye temechi ya ye vyokona chitufu le waba ya iye kubate wakole viva watu usula ya kagombe anti kuno mukwano echi womereze chisukako kubo mukwano kuno kwa tapu wakota jogera chimu labu labu oh 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 opa monsindala debio kola bintabula
Chino tu chingale, yira tu chingale, we yira tu chingale,
once more,
chino tu chingale, yira tu chingale, we.
Lava what to say, Nateva make a cool say. Mapulava to know I know any mama. Momuana Mojena, Michawa, Michova, ten baby young one. Oh, German, then I see a lot.
Don't you worry, cause times are windy.
Nange windy.
Yira tu chingale, chino tu chingale, yira tu chingale, we.
Senga, senga yambo zanga,
Sawa. pesa ya mbongo o ya dola. Ya paso de ma.
lundi à libelle à maman Montamay. Il est qui paraît cette union soit là-bas, portable canadien. À ta ma foute à tomate à la quitter. Kasi yango eleka ki mosuni na lembi banda yokenda apeti esilanga nakoma kolia kaka mpona sepelisa monoko ye mateya ya mamezanga bileka mpe minerval kasi eleki baleso bametre baprofeseur bapesanga mama soki ozalaki kaka na bomoi Belena Sengi Batayo ministre éducation Belé va parker ma prison yon soit bakanga Belé koutou moutou ma bea saliste Lelo na kanisio mingi maman Au jour anniversaire, n'en a eu promis. Invité Bakoli à Bakome la Massara. Yo poutou artisan en voyons à l'ité. Et pas aux alliés sans yo poutani na occasion. Et Indelamba carte de vœux à ta fololo. Et c'est bon, n'en a eu pose à la nuit du billet fois deux. Normalement, fait y aller l'an et Zaliayo. Serment d'Hippocrate, va médecin, va pose à la carte. Yanga serma yo zala toujours mama nanga Ata baba neli mokili soki balazoni Yanga serma yo zala toujours mama nanga
Je voulais yo asakei Matika lobe na Pierre Chongo Ma pene kato na kauka Batela kanga yo mwana
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Douglas Impuga, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a ripened fruit does not cling to the vine. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, the United States Department of State issues its annual Trafficking in Persons Report, or TIP report, which evaluates the anti-trafficking efforts of 187 countries and territories, including the United States. The report measures government efforts in prosecuting traffickers, protecting victims, and preventing the crime. Human trafficking, also known as modern slavery, is a heinous crime that happens almost everywhere and affects virtually everyone. Today, more than 20 million people around the world are victims of human trafficking. Yet globally, governments report fewer than 15,000 prosecutions and 10,000 convictions. Human trafficking is as old as humankind. Regrettably, it's been with us for centuries and centuries. But in the expression of this act, as I read that one line to you, it is our hope that the 21st century will be the last century of human trafficking. And that's what we are all committed to, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson at the report's launching ceremony on June 27th.
The consequences of our failure to act in this area has so many other negative impacts around the world. It breeds corruption, It undermines the rule of law. It erodes the core values that underpin a civil society. Transnational criminal networks also, whether they be drug dealers, money launderers, or document forgers, are partly enabled by participating in human trafficking activities as well.
In a letter opening this year's report, Secretary Tillerson said that this year's report focuses on the responsibility of all governments to criminalize human trafficking in all its forms and to prosecute offenders as outlined by the Palermo Protocol, an international treaty on transnational crime. Because trafficking in persons is a global scourge, the United States will partner with governments, civil society, law enforcement groups, and survivors to provide help for those who need our support. Secretary Tillerson also introduced the Program to End Modern Slavery, a new initiative that will increase funding for prosecution, protection, and prevention efforts to reduce the occurrence of modern slavery wherever it is most prevalent. The United States is a leader in the fight against human trafficking. We seek justice for victims and accountability for offenders, wrote Secretary Tillerson. We remain committed to the elimination of human trafficking here and abroad.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.